Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insights segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
I might say that in the very beginning, I congratulated the president on the passage of the new voting bill, knowing that he had worked so passionately and unrelentingly for this bill, and made it very clear to him that this would be a great step forward and removing all of the remaining obstacles to the right to vote.
That was the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. during a press conference at the White House on August 5th, 1965. It was one day before President Lyndon Johnson signed the historic Voting Rights Act. Ironically, on the holiday celebrating his birth, the fight to strengthen voting rights likely will fizzle during a planned Senate vote tomorrow. Tonight, we look at the role Dr. King played in getting the 1965 Voting Rights Act passed and why the political clock appears to be turning back in 2022. My guests are Reverend Alvin Herring, Executive Director of the grassroots civil rights organization Faith in Action, and Dr. Ravi Perry, Chair of the Political Science Department here at Howard University. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. I want to know what you think about where we are and what could or could not happen tomorrow in the Senate. Lines are open. Give us a call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Reverend Herring, thanks for joining the conversation.
Brother Fisher, thank you for having me, and happy MLK Day to you and to all your listeners.
Thank you so much. Same to you. And Dr. Perry, always good to have you on the program.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Yes, indeed. It may not be for those supporting the voting rights bills, however. It looks like things are going nowhere fast. Kind of set the table for us and what we can expect or not expect tomorrow, Dr. Perry.
Yes, it's great to be here on this, of course, historic Martin Luther King Jr. National Federal Holiday. And, you know, the Democrats made a pact in the U.S. Senate last year that by this holiday that they would have passed voting rights. Of course, they failed in that regard, principally because there are two U.S. Democratic senators that are making it hard in the Senate that is tied 50-50 for them to make progress on this bill. Senator Joe Manchin from West Virginia, Democrat, Senator Kristi Sinema, Arizona Democrat, have both come out being against the filibuster, which they have already, by the way, voted for to change the debt ceiling. And the filibuster has been changed a dozen or so times since the 70s for a variety of reasons, most notably during the Obama administration when Republicans were in control of the Senate as it related to judicial nominations. So the idea that it's some sacrosanct part of our Constitution is a fundamental inaccurate statement. And the idea that it's something that is the pillar of our democratic institutions and that somehow without it, you know, we would not be, you know, able to function as a democratic system with bipartisanship is also something that is more of a perception than it is a reality. And so the challenge for tomorrow is going to be if we are able to convince Manchin and Sinema on this effort. Otherwise, what we can expect is the bill will be introduced tomorrow in the Senate. It will begin debate tomorrow, but it has low expectations of passage if you can't get Sinema and Manchin to say yes to the filibuster, which would do what? It would allow the Senate to pass certain legislation, like they did with the debt ceiling a couple months ago, regardless of the rule of needing 60 or more senators. And so, by the way, the framers of the Constitution never required anything more than a simple majority. And that's something that I think people should just remember.
Mm. Reverend Herring, when you look at the symbolism of today, the marches that we saw today, not only in D.C., but around the country, as it relates to MLK Day and the vote, what comes to mind? Is it, you know, for Are civil rights out of no longer in vogue for anyone, you know, but the people that they really impact?
Well, Harold, I think that's a great question. And first, let me thank Dr. Perry for that very precise and concise lesson, really, on where we are right now with the voting rights legislation. I think to your question, Brother Fisher, it seems to me that where we are right now is, and you heard this said over and over in the last few days, maybe last few weeks, last few months, is we are at a crossroads. You know, any government that pretends to be a democracy that might grant citizenship without protecting the right to vote, one would have to question whether or not it's a democracy at all. And if we're just talking about the political ramifications of citizenship, the political ramifications of going to the polls and casting your votes for political candidates, without talking about the moral questions that are involved here, then I think we're not having a complete conversation. I think that's where we are. We're not having a complete conversation. I mean, historically, we have relied on both the courts and legislation to make it clear that in this country, if indeed we are a democracy, then everyone has the right to vote, an unfettered, unambiguous right to cast their vote. And any time that right is bridged, then we have to think that there are precipitating causes. We know that today the precipitating cause is America's hangover with its lust for white supremacy and the way in which racism, in all of its expressions and all the other ways in which we oppress and limit people, have defined some as worthy and some as not. As a clergy, I believe the question in front of us today is a moral question. It is a theological question, even. I think God made it quite clear through the beauty of creation that all creation is to be regarded as equal, as good, and as valued. But in this country, we've taken the step to say that not all life is precious, and not all people count, and not all votes are worth counting. And I think that we are in a very, very perilous time.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are looking on this MLK Day at the role Dr. King played in getting the 1965 Voting Rights Act passed and why the political clock appears to be turning back in 2022. What do you have to say about where we are with voting rights for this country and what this could mean going forward? Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Reverend Herring, do you think that Americans have such a short memory, because we are talking about somewhat 56 years or so ago, about the struggle for equal rights when it comes to the vote across the board? And or maybe that there are some members of the political population that do remember well that struggle and as a result are trying to turn back the clock. And what do you believe Dr. King would say were he still alive today about where we are with this voting struggle?
Well, that's another great question, and I wish we had all the time in the world to really ponder it. But let me just say that today, on this MLK Day, I looked at a photograph of Dr. King, along with his wife Coretta, casting a vote in 1964 in Georgia in an election. And it reminded me that my father, born in Clayton, Alabama in 1928, could not vote, neither could his father. By the time my father came to manhood 18 years later in Alabama, he still could not vote. By the time my father left Alabama at the age of 25, could not vote. And by the time I was born, 1957, in 1964, my father took me and his family to Alabama all these years later and still could not vote. This is an ancient history. This is recent history. And the struggle to ensure what the 15th Amendment purportedly guaranteed continues today. And here we are, 150-some years later. One might say, yeah, we've developed a very terrible case of racially motivated amnesia. But one would also have to question, And what is the deeper impact of disenfranchising millions of its citizens and making it difficult for them, nigh impossible for them to vote? What's the benefit of that, if you will? And obviously, one significant benefit is it allows you to maintain a system in this country where there are those who live a first-class life, as Dr. King would talk about, and those who are consigned to a second-class life. And that pattern, that intention to deny people their human dignity continues today. That is why I'm sure you're fighting, I'm fighting, Dr. Perry as well. And the job is not done, and the fight is not over.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about voting rights on this MLK Day. What do you think? Where are we? Let's go to Vernon. Vernon calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Vernon. What's on your mind?
Yes, it's appalling that we're still, America, still dealing with this issue. You know, weren't they listening when Dr. King said that he'd been to the promised land and he saw it. And speaking from a spiritual aspect that's out of man's hands, he said that this great country who has been favored by God because of the creed that they wrote in their own constitution, all men are created equal. That there's a handful that still want to hold on to that old boy white America aspect of this so-called democracy. They don't understand that it will and it must be the great country it was formed to be, and that's a country where all men are created equal. Mm-hmm. And still today they don't understand that the fight just gets deeper and deeper. The more the resistance, the harder we must fight.
Yeah. Well, Vernon, thank you so much for your input. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. To Vernon's point, Dr. Perry, briefly share with us about the fight that led up to the 1965 Voting Rights Act, the political fight that got this historic legislation, to use a football metaphor, over the goal line.
Yes, so this was a very important, obviously, one of the most significant efforts that we've ever seen in our Constitution. So, long story short, black folks didn't have voting rights for the first time ever with the 15th Amendment passed in 1870 that gave black men the right to vote. As you may know, after the Civil War, there was a period of about 15 years or so, 11 years roughly, during what we call Reconstruction, where many African Americans were elected to public office, including the U.S. Senate and governor's offices, et cetera, for the first time. And that, however, was curtailed after the Samuel Tills Hayden and Rutherford Hayes election in 1876. Why is that important? Because elections have consequences. As a result of that election, it was a tie election. Rutherford Hayes said that, well, if you let me win, and Samuel Tilden being from the South, then I'll remove the federal troops from the South, which, of course, gave blacks the protections of the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment, including citizenship and equal protection and due process. And so because of that election, we had then experienced another 100 years of second-class citizenship, including Jim Crow and Black Codes and Plessy versus Ferguson. And it wasn't until Brown versus the Board of Education in 1954 where, on paper, some of that began to change. And it didn't really begin to change until the first election in 1968, where we began to see, because of the Voting Rights Act of 65 and the Civil Rights Act of 64, what black voting power might look like in mass. And unfortunately, we have not kept up pace as African Americans with that voting power since the mid-60s with our foremothers and fathers who voted with gusto in the tail end of that civil rights movement. And so it's important to emphasize that had it not been for the Voting Rights Act, you would never have elected the black politicians you have around the whole country and some of the liberal white supporters that really have created the laws that we all benefit from today. But it's also important to emphasize that descriptive representation alone has never been something that blacks can rely on. Who was in the United States Congress in the 1960s when these bills were passed? They were mostly white folks. In 1964, when the Civil Rights Bill was passed, right before voting rights, there was only one black person in the U.S. House of Representatives from Michigan, Charles Biggs. And so what does that say? It says that it's always taken white folks, it's always taken people in the South, it's always taken people who disagree with you to get voting rights passed, and that's what we need to see again tomorrow.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking voting rights on this MLK Day. Where are we? Are we going backwards? We're also talking about this critical Senate vote tomorrow. What will or will not happen? If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Sheka, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Mr. Earl. You know, it's very sad. I think we're going backwards. As a young man who came here as a child, as a refugee, my first time I voted in my life was for President Obama. Mm. But my first time I ever vote in my life, I'm from Africa, but I came here when I was a young child. When you have a racist Supreme Court, it all started when the Supreme Court got the Fifth Amendment to the Voting Rights and the Second Amendment to the Voting Rights. And it's sad to see, as a young man, to see what has happened and is happening again, and we don't have no support from those people who are supposed to help the voting rights sustain in the Supreme Court as a law. So it's time for African Americans, for us to know our rights, for us to stand up and fight for voting rights, because the way this country is going, it's not going in the good direction. Like, it's going really, really bad. And it's really nervous for colored people like myself. This is the only country I know, United States. I don't even know the country where I was born, in Sierra Leone. I can't live there. So if this kind of thing is going on and tomorrow we have a big vote in the Senate, it's really serious. You know, it's very sad.
Well, Sheka, thank you so much. I really appreciate your input and your passion. I appreciate your comments. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Voting rights on this MLK Day. We're going to take a break, but stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. Stay with us. Lines are still open. We'll be back in a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're looking at the role Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. played in getting the 1965 Voting Rights Act passed and why the political clock appears to be turning backwards in 2022. My guests are Reverend Alvin Herring, Executive Director of the Grassroots Civil Rights Organization, Faith in Action, and Dr. Ravi Perry, Chair of the Political Science Department at Howard University. I want to hear what you have to say about where we are regarding voting rights in 2022. Give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Herring and Dr. Perry, I must say that I was struck by Sheka's well-informed comment. An immigrant from Africa, from the great continent, who was able to speak about Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act and what happened via the Supreme Court decision. I would argue that there are probably a whole lot of people who were born in this country who supporting voting rights right now who could not speak to that. Dr. Perry.
Oh, absolutely. That was a brilliant comment. But it also tells you what we know about immigrants, which is why we should never disparage them.
Right.
First of all, to pass a citizenship test, to become an immigrant as an adult in this country, you have to do very well. And as someone who teaches Introduction to American Politics every day, you know, that isn't something that we teach very well in public education here in the United States. So it absolutely, I'm actually not surprised. That some immigrants are very intelligent about what they know in American history, because you have to learn it in order to become an immigrant, particularly as an adult, whereas Americans don't have to learn it. It's pretty much optional. It used to be required in my day and perhaps the day of those of us on this call, but for many generations, many folks born, millennials born in the late 90s to the present, they've had now generations of miseducation, to borrow the famous phrase, of course, where they don't know their own power in their own government. And so it's certainly, so exciting that immigrants know that information. But it also says that we have to do a better job of sharing the power of the story of what happened in Shelby v. Holder, which said essentially, just to recap, that when that decision was made, about a decade ago now, that when that decision was made, Chief Justice John Roberts basically made the case that because we've elected black folks across the country in political offices, that we no longer have the racism and discrimination, so we don't need these preclearance contexts in these counties that historically have discriminated against black folks that are in voting. And, of course, what you see in the last several election cycles, you saw those very counties, those very states in Republican conservative hands do the kinds of things that make it harder for people to vote. And by the way, this is not a black issue. I just want to emphasize that because it's MLK Day. I get it. It's the African-American concern. But voting rights should be a concern to all Americans, whether you're black, you're white, you're an immigrant, or you're not. This is about the democracy that we live in. And let's be sure and clear that if the democracy disappears, it will disappear because voting rights disappear. And none of us know what the world will look like when that happens, and all of us should be afraid of it.
Reverend Herring, your thoughts about Shekha's comment?
Oh, I agree with Dr. Perry. Those are very astute comments. And, you know, in our work at Faith in Action, we're the country's largest and oldest faith-rooted community organizing network. We work every day to bring people inside of the space of public engagement, registering people to vote, getting them out there and understanding the issues, and not only voting, but sometimes also running for office, and then once in office, insisting and ensuring that that those persons, and themselves included, represent the needs and concerns of the people that they've been elected to represent. I think Shaka is absolutely right. You know, I often say in our work that the poorest among us, the most disaffected among us, the most maligned among us are the ones who perhaps have the greatest zeal for democracy. We understand well the concept that everybody should count, everyone should matter. We understand well that you should not squelch anyone's voice. We understand that, and we fight very hard to insist that people have the unfettered, unambiguous right to cast their vote and to make their personhood known within the context of this political system. Dr. Perry is also right. This is not a black issue only. There are many, many ways in which all of us should feel very threatened by any act that would constrict any person's right to vote. There are hundreds of thousands of young people who might be white, Latino, Asian, as well as African American, who attend college campuses across the country, and because of where they are and where they're registered and the laws within their state, they may not be able to vote. There are hundreds of thousands of folks, not just African Americans, who are either in prison or just coming back from prison, who have their right to vote constrained. And there are millions of folks who in some states don't have the proper identification or have their polling place changed or have their names purged from the rolls or are living in gerrymandered districts where if they do vote, their vote is so watered down by the arcane way in which these districts are put together that is hard to have kind of group expression and fulfillment of group needs. So this is an issue that we all should be concerned about. This vote tomorrow will be historic. My prediction is that it will not pass. And my further prediction is it will unleash a wave of renewed and vigorous fight to insist and ensure that everyone has the right to vote. So, you know, as a person of faith, I'm turning it all over to God. But I also know, as Fannie Lou Hamer said, you know, you pray and you pray and you pray. And then after that, God's not going to just put it in your lap. You get up and fight. Or as Frederick Douglass said, you know, I prayed all day on my knees, but I didn't get freedom until I prayed with my feet. And so we know that we've got to be active. We've got to be vigilant. We've got to use every tool at our disposal. It ain't over yet.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Damien calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I was calling because, it do seem like we having a whole lot of problem with voting rights. I mean, that's something that's major as well. But then you also got the court systems out there trying to pass laws that they aren't even passing and using them against defendants in court. And that has been done to me, and my own public defender wouldn't do anything about it.
Well, I would say let's talk about that more, I think, more broadly. And Dr. Perry, I'm sure you can address this. Voting, and this is a conversation we've had ad nauseum, but voting is not just about voting for president. It's not just voting for your congressional representative or for a Senate. It comes down all the way down to the level that Damien is talking about right now, not just federal judges or district court judges or county judges, but judges wherever you happen to live, because a great many judges are they take the bench by the vote. And even those judges who are appointed by what? People that what? You vote for Dr. Perry. And so I think that it's an argument that sometimes is lost on a lot of people.
I mean, it's
certainly, and first of all, it's important to emphasize the formerly incarcerated, the currently incarcerated, those out on parole and probation, those involved in our criminal justice system, they also have rights to vote, too. So we have a concept in this country where we tend to have most crimes be state level, you know, kinds of crimes, and states then can strip or have stripped, you know, convicted individuals of their voting rights, which to me is just something that should never happen. And so we should really pass a law that ensures that cannot happen, in my opinion, nationwide. And so I applaud Damien and the attempt to try to improve the criminal justice system, how you work with your parole officers, et cetera, to try to have a more engaged reentry into society. Not the best phrasing of that term, but the idea that we want people to all be in a position to maximize their power. And to me, as an educator, that begins with knowing what your rights are. And knowing how best to execute them. We all live in systems, and we have to find ways to navigate those systems to our maximum benefit. The system we live in politically is a two-party political system. That is not going to change anytime soon. It's not going to go away today, tomorrow, or the next decade. It can change, however, by way of two things. Either we see an insurrection like we did last January 6th or so, a year or so ago, which, of course, will create chaos and anarchy and danger. Revolution is another way. A lot of people, you know, activists prefer that term, but that also creates chaos and dangerous. Or we use the system within our power right now to make it better. And so far, when African Americans have done that, when gay Americans have done that, when when Asian Americans have done that, when the disabled Americans have done that, so on and so forth, we have found ways to make big wins within an imperfect system. So we have to first recognize that the system itself is not necessarily the problem. And if you believe it is the problem, then I think the goal for us is to work together to change it from within. The effort of trying to beat the system is really just something that's, I think, a bit more complicated than really any of us are really able to do. We're not only the United States. We're the world's global economic power. And so to uproot that system would uproot the entire planet as we know it. And so that's just unlikely. What's more likely is that we need folks like Damien and others, wherever you may be, to choose to participate in your local elections, your state elections, your federal elections, wherever you may be, whether it be on an off Tuesday or a Saturday morning. Find the time to make it a part of your regular schedule, like you brush your teeth, because citizenship, particularly as black folks, we fought and died for that. We all have family members who have fought and died for the right to vote. And I know younger folks don't like that argument, but I keep bringing that argument up in classes to remind folks that your marching and your rallying that we're doing today as young folks are doing every day here in the streets of D.C., certainly, it's not new. We've seen this fight before. We've seen the voting rights fight before. And yes, it's been less partisan before. We've gotten some successes and maybe times past that we might have some nostalgia about now. But we're in the here, now, and present today. And if we don't say voting rights, as was being said by some prior callers as well, then we're not going to give people a lot of reason to want to participate in the system. And so I would not blame Democrats. I would not blame Republicans. I would blame, if anyone, citizens who are choosing not to maximize their own power. That is our collective responsibility. And I would say it's more than our responsibility. It's our opportunity.
Yeah. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Gwen calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Gwen. What's on your mind?
Hey, good evening. Hello, Dr. Perry. This is Gwen Davis from Third Street Bethel from Social Action Committee. Thanks for having me. How you doing?
I'm great.
Fantastic.
Go right ahead, Gwen.
Here's my question. I'm just concerned. We are spending a lot of time on Joe Manchin and Sinema and trying to get them to change their vote. But it feels as if we're giving the Republican senators a pass. We're not putting any pressure on them. We're not requiring them to do anything. It's as if we're just giving up and that we feel we have to just go through either to carve out on the filibuster or some way around it, as opposed to making these folks do their job. We should not allow them to be in Congress and to be able to decide that they're just not going to do something.
What can we do? Let me have Reverend Herring speak about that first, and then Dr. Perry chime in, because they were duly elected, Reverend Herring, and so I don't know how you can, take the vote from Manchin or Sinema, but go right ahead.
Well, I think the caller makes a very strong point. I think it's very clear that we all have an obligation and responsibility to uphold the highest ideals of democracy. Cornerstone of that is that one person, one vote. Anyone who doesn't do all that they can, any political official who doesn't do all that they can to guarantee that, is failing not only in their job as an elected public official, but they're failing in their moral obligation to make sure that everyone is included, and not just for the sake of inclusion, but we need everyone to make this democracy strong. And we need to provide and care for everyone in order to make our social bond strong. We need everyone in order to make our economic and political systems work well. And that is the obligation of all of us. And certainly, as it relates to elected officials, it is all of their responsibility. No one should get a pass. Yes, it does feel very traitorous if you are a Democrat. We are a nonpartisan organization, but let me just speak to that part of the question. It should feel very traitorous if you are a Democrat. The two key Democratic senators have already expressed their unwillingness to do all that they can to ensure that the rules of the Senate allow for a vote, one that would, in all likelihood, if they were inclined to vote for voting rights, one in all likelihood would send that legislation forward. But it's not just on them. caller is absolutely right. And it's not just even on all of our elected officials, although the spotlight is on them right now. It is actually on all of us. We are either in this together or we're not. We're either insisting that everyone has the right to vote and that vote should not be fettered in any way, or not. And I think the question is pretty stark. It's pretty clear. We're living in a time where people say often that things aren't clear enough. Well, this is very clear. If there's any one person or any segment of the society that cannot vote, then this democracy is not, in fact, a democracy. And then people should feel very frightened that today it might be this group whose rights are thrown under the bus, and tomorrow it might be yours. And I think Dr. Perry talked earlier about what are the various methods or roads to change in a society. And most of those roads are not entirely good. There is one road, however, that is good, and that is when we each remember that we are obligated, that voting is not just a right, it's a responsibility. And we're each obligated to ensure not only that we are expressing our right to vote and using it in constructive ways, but we are guaranteeing that others have the same right. And until all of us are in this, some of us will be left out of it. We're probably going to find that happen tomorrow. But then it's the day after tomorrow that I'm concerned about, and that's where we've got to rally and organize ourselves. Let's remember, in 2020, it was one of the highest levels of black and brown voter engagement in the country. All eyes were on the Georgia runoff, and you saw black folk and Latino folk and poor and rural whites organized all across the state of Georgia, this multiracial, multi-faith communion, and you saw the voters express their opinion at the election in a way that have added significantly positively to things going on in the state of Georgia and across the country. So there is a way out of this, but we've got to go through this space right here where we have kind of given the responsibility of ensuring democracy to someone else and not taking it on as our own responsibility.
Dr. Perry, I don't want to hijack Gwen's question, but something occurred to me too related to what she was asking. So we know that Build Back Better was hijacked because of Joe Manchin in the West Virginia senator. He was saying that it was too expensive. Okay. All right. If you take that in, you just look at that with blinders on. Okay, Joe. Too expensive. You didn't like it. And it failed. But the voting rights legislation, this isn't about money. This is about politics. This is about voting rights. From your perspective, Dr. Perry, and to the issue with Kyrsten Sinema as well in Arizona, what do they want? Why don't they just become Republicans? Because it just seems that they are scuttling the Democratic agenda, Build Back Better, voting rights, whatever.
So I'll try to be, you know, as quick as I can with this. There's a lot of things of this with this great question from Sister Davis, and I think that it's important for listeners to understand a couple of things. One, the reason why Manchin and Sinema matter politically right now is because all Republicans have chosen to vote in, as we say, in lockstep.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they matter. If you're able to pull off a couple Republicans, to Gwen's question, and we should focus on liberal Republicans in swing states as well. Those may be willing to pull them away. The media tends to go to, oh, let's go to Romney, but you know that Utah is not a swing state, so he doesn't really have much incentive other than his personal conviction, and that, as we know, isn't necessarily, unfortunately, as powerful as it is for some others. And so we need to go to these Republican senators in liberal states or just in moderate states that have the understanding that this is more so about the structure of our system, not about another policy matter. You know, this is another policy matter like Build Back. The reason why Build Back Better, I think, was unable to get the large ticket price that they wanted. One, because it wasn't supposed to be that ticket price. That was the initial ticket price, right? That you always start with a high price knowing that you're going to have to negotiate down, 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 down. So no one ever thought that it would be the $3 trillion bill that was originally proposed to be. It was a bit smaller than what some people imagined it may have been, but, you know, there were both progressive skirmishes there, but mainly the centrist, so-called centrist of Manchin and Sinema are the two that are arguably, at least in terms of the media, held that up too. But we need to be right and be honest that this is not a Democrat versus Republican issue. This is about the system. We have a 50-50 Senate. None of us in our lifetime have ever seen a 50-50 Senate. I think it's just important to pause and recognize that. None of us have. Not our parents and not their parents. And so it is a fairly uncharted territory, to be fair to everybody involved working on Capitol Hill. But, and on top of that, we live in a very hyper-partisan politic era. And we know for a fact, we've done decades of research on this, that when more people vote, Republicans tend to lose. So there's not an incentive for Republicans in general to expand voting access beyond the fact that it is the morally right thing to do. And unfortunately, as I said earlier, that's not enough of a conviction for some folks, sadly. And so I think that coupled with the fact that we do see, actually speaking of morality, we do see a decline in church attendance, decline in young people, you know, paying attention to or affiliating with any religious group whatsoever. And I do think that has to do with people's politics. If you are less concerned about we and more concerned about me, then you're also probably less concerned about voting rights. If you don't have a collective understanding that this is a world on which we live in that's interdependent, that we do nothing without each other, then you probably are less concerned about voting rights. If you're one of those folks that believes in the myth of the American dream and of bootstraps, pulling yourself up alone, and somehow you did it without any help, if that's what you believe you can do in America, then perhaps that's the story that you can live by. But in most cases, I think if we're honest, we realize that all success and growth comes because people have worked together. And voting rights is something that it's not just about, you know, getting people the right to the polls. It's about also changing the way in which the system works. If you don't like the way your city council runs, then, you know, you can change the representation on the council, who can then change the rules on how the council governs. And those are the kinds of role things that we all need to be participating more in politics. I think we are hindered by, my last point would be this here, I think we're hindered by social media in so many ways, and that we live in an era now that it's where we make business and money and off of the really the pain and kind of sorrow of others. And unfortunately, we don't live in a world, particularly here in the United States, in the Western world, where we see how this collective kind of dependence on one another has been able to sustain life. I think the best example of this is climate change. But unfortunately, we've all been introduced to climate change through partisan lenses.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we don't breathe blue and red water, I mean, blue and red air, or drink blue and red water, right? These are all things that we depend on. But we would rather hear about it from our self-selected news sources than hear about it from, let's say, a public health official, because we don't trust anything that doesn't come in a package that reflects our preconceived notions. And that's a real danger. So we are not a democracy. I'll end with this. It's important to know that. But we are a democratic republic. And that requires us to send people to city council, to state capitals, and to Washington, D.C. to represent us. And but it's our job to tell them what to do when they get there. And if we obfuscate our responsibility in either one of those, then we really aren't being, in my opinion, a very active citizen. And you really aren't doing the best job in promoting your own group interests.
Before I go back to Reverend Herring, I wanted to go back to something you said, Dr. Perry, that struck me, because I can't say that I've ever heard it put quite this way. You said that young people do not like the argument that others have died for your right to vote. What do they tell you, and I mean, how do you know that they don't like it, and how do they express their dislike for that phrase?
Well, by young people, I mean mostly high school, college student age.
I get it. Yeah, they're young.
Right. And so just to specify, but what they tend to say is that, A, you know, that was then, this is now. That's one response. Another response is that they just don't see how their sacrifice today has much to do with whatever's going on in the news right now. Which of course is I think is somewhat of a sad commentary on some of the youth development going on in our minds today. But I think the third main reason is that they see the effort to fight for the right to vote. I use the example of black women all the time. And you know, those one heel church shoes that they used to wear a lot in the 50s and 60s. And I use the story of marching from Selma to Montgomery. And imagine it's a summer day, because these marches were always in the summer. And so you're hot, you're in high heels or at least some type of a heel. You're walking for miles for days in some instances. And you're walking for what purpose? You're walking because you simply want to have the chance to vote in, well, let's say, the next election in your hometown. Well, let's be clear. That next election in our hometown, for most of those black folks in Alabama, if you're still going to be voting for a racist sheriff named Bull Connor, right, or a racist governor named George Wallace, the point wasn't to vote for someone you like or someone who agreed with you or someone who shares your progressive values. The point was to have the opportunity to participate in the system.
Yeah.
And young people today don't view that point as enough of a reason for them to dive in, get their hands and feet wet, and get muddy in the water of the fighting for democracy.
Reverend Herring, I'll let you have the last word on this issue, on this MLK Day.
Well, I appreciate you, Brother Fisher, having us on, and all your guests and all your listeners. I think that we stand tonight on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day celebration, holding our breath and waiting to see what the Senate will do tomorrow, but knowing full well that regardless of what the Senate does tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, we have to continue to fight for full inclusion in this society, and we have to continue to fight to improve this democracy, challenge this democracy, and where necessary, critique this democracy in such a way that it can change. I think that we're living at a time where there's a great deal of despair. To your earlier question about young people, I know that when I and other clergy were on the front lines with young people in Ferguson and in Baltimore and in other parts in Baton Rouge and in Minnesota, that what young people have been telling us, what they were telling us then, what they tell us now, is that it's not that they don't want to participate in democracy. It's not that they don't believe that their work, their voice, their vote can count. It's that they just can't imagine carrying the burden of being so disconnected and dislocated across the entire span of their life. They can't imagine what that must have been like, what that must be like for us, what it must have been like for their foremothers and forefathers.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They certainly don't want that experience for themselves going into it. So I think that what we have to do right now.
10 seconds, Reverend Herring, yes. I got to go.
So what we have to do now is to push that each of us to take up the mantle and continue the fight. I pray that that will be what we do the day after tomorrow.
Dr. Ravi Perry, Reverend Alan Herring, thank you both for talking to us. I appreciate your time. That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, January 17th, 2022. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.